What's up, everyone? Welcome to AfterBuzz TV's Popcorn Talk. I'm Nick Marty, and today we're talking everything Midnighters. We have three very special guests, including director, producer, writer, and the star of the film herself. So stay tuned.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's I Talk Movies. See the light
shine. It is catchy. It's nice. Fitting.
Love this song. I love Matt Myers of Houndmouth. They're great. He was in our movie. Yeah.
It's a nice song. It's kind of like, and I also feel like, as opposed to this hectic movie, it's also kind of a song that you're driving down Route 66.
Yeah.
Perhaps totally. The perfect song to end a film on.
Oh,
maybe.
Dare I say it.
Might I say? Well, thank you guys for coming today. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
How did I get so lucky to have three of y'all together at the same time in studio?
You played the lottery. That's what you did.
I did, and I won. I won big. Thank you guys so much. So today we have Julius Ramsey, who, this is your theatrical director debut. Mm-hmm. For this film, Midnighters. Mm-hmm. So congratulations, that's
Thank
awesome.
You. Thank you, very
awesome film.
To be here.
And yeah, so he's sitting next to me. I got a very special guy today.
Yeah, you have the seat of honor.
And next to Julius, we have the star of the film herself, Alex Esso.
Hello.
Oh, are we bowing, clapping?
Bowing.
You get the works.
Oh my God.
You get the works.
I feel so special.
The illustrious Alex Esso. In person. The life, the legend, the myth.
Yes, exactly.
The one and only.
Hope I live up
and
to the stories.
Next to her, I bet feeling the glow of the star, we have True. Alson Ramsey, who producer and writer of the film.
Yes, and the heat just radiates off.
You feel it?
Yeah.
You're getting a little sweaty then from it.
Big, bright, shining star.
Pump up the AC, please. Pump up the AC. We got a lot of heat in this room right now. But thank you guys so much for being here. I'm so excited to talk about this film. So first of all, let me hear from you as a director mm-hmm. about this film. For people who may have not read about it yet, but have seen the poster flying around, describe this film for me real quick.
Sure, and I just want to say I'm so happy to be here on Popcorn Talk. I'm a big
Thank
fan.
You.
Longtime fan.
Thank you.
First time caller. no, it's a great movie. It is my theatrical feature film debut. I've directed a lot of television. I've worked in television for many years. Mainly in the genre space, like a lot of horror, thriller, science fiction type of stuff.
Yeah.
And my brother and I decided we wanted to make a movie, and we wanted to do a film that didn't really rely on any of the conventions of supernatural goings-on or, gimmicks like a magical Ouija board or a giant, zombie or whatever.
Yeah.
Not that those things are bad, because I love that stuff, but for ourselves, we wanted to make a film that in certain ways is a bit of a throwback to, the old school thrillers like Alfred Hitchcock films. A big film that was a source of inspiration for this was Shallow Grave by the director
uh-huh.
Danny Boyle, which I love, one of my personal favorites. And so we set those parameters in place, and we also decided we wanted to do a film that was a low enough budget that if push came to shove, we could make it ourselves. We go out and raise the money, and that's eventually what we did. So the film itself, it's a noir thriller, like in the vein of like early Coen brothers, Blood Simple, or there's an English film called The Disappearance of Alice Creed, where it's contained, but it also has elements of it that feel scopey. And the storyline is about a couple that's driving home from a New Year's Eve party in a they're not so happily married, shall we say.
Yeah.
And they wind up getting into a car accident and killing a man on a isolated forested road near their house. And they discover that he was carrying a gun and a piece of paper with their home address written on it. So
yeah.
Shenanigans ensue from there. So it's got a lot of twists and turns, a lot of thrills, a lot of, scares and jumps. But I think it's also got some wonderful character development, which in large part is the responsibility of, my brother who wrote the script and, dear Alex Esso, who's here in person, as well as a bunch of other really great, really talented actors.
No, for sure. I definitely agree. And I know for you, for writing this film, the screenplay, how do you are a former speechwriter.
Yes.
How do you go from speechwriting to writing about a man getting hit by a car and then having an address to the family of the car, he hit or he got hit by? How does that happen?
There was a stop in Afghanistan for a year. So
okay.
maybe that has something to do with it. I always wanted to screenwrite. It always been a hobby of mine. So I was working at the Pentagon as a speechwriter for Secretary of Defense Robert Gates. Then I spent a year in Afghanistan and got to a point where I decided it's now or never. And like so many people, I threw my stuff in the trunk of my car and drove cross country to California to move in with Jude. I mean, I think a lot of the skills of speechwriting translated over more so than I thought. The way you write dialogue, the way you try to get in people's heads and whatnot. You know, there were more skills that I found applicable to it. It has, you know, nothing to do with the work I was doing at the Pentagon. But I do have a military action script that hopefully will see the light of day at some point.
Like you also just said, you know, getting into people's heads like you did in this film. You know, we're thinking the whole time during the film. There's not rest or easy, you know, we're not chilling during this film is what I'm saying.
No, not a bit.
So you're inside our heads the whole time. So I think the Pentagon definitely related to this film.
Yes.
So the work. And now, Alex, you know, do you think your personal life is almost in some aspects a little bit like Lindsay? Is there anything that's relatable to Lindsay?
Oh, gosh.
She has a body in the trunk of her car, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Be careful.
Yes, I know, right? No, there's not a lot of parallels between myself and Lindsay. Just one of the reasons I was so excited to play her.
Yeah.
You know, it was a nice departure.
So then for, you know, from this film on, do you think you might want to do more films of this type of genre? And of this twists and turns?
Oh, sure. I mean, I love the sort of high stakes drama, you know, which I really think of Midnighters as more of a sort of crime drama than anything else. Like, it's very much a character study across the board. I mean, not just with Lindsay.
Yeah.
So I'm always down for that. I mean, the sort of meditative... I mean, even though, as Jude says, there are, you know, really crazy moments in the movie, ultimately, that I think that that's what you will take away from it the most.
And how did you guys give her character's name? how did you develop that name? I'm curious about that.
And by the way, I know they keep referring to me as Jute. That's my nickname. So
okay.
Kind of an odd name.
Yeah. I quickly jumped on board.
Professionally.
Okay.
It's a family nickname. That's a whole nother podcast. I don't know where the name came from. I mean, to be honest, I can't really think of where the particular name came from. It just, you know, you go through these long list of names. I mean, I have a book where I live that is a list of baby names, and it's just all the names for mothers to buy when they're going to have a baby.
Oh, yeah.
It's like this giant list of names.
Yeah.
So it's all in one place. And, you know, you kind of go through that and you just throw out names. Then finally, it fits. I mean, to me, Lindsay, it's got a bit of a regal quality to it, but it's also like not necessarily like you don't think of like President Lindsay, but you might think of like Secretary of State Lindsay. You know, she's like just under being a real
leader. Don't underestimate
her. Yeah, but like she could jump in if like something happened. Like she's the one who can take charge. And, you know, in this film, that's really what her character arc, you know, is all about. It's about someone who's, you know, maybe settled at lower circumstances than she deserves, and discovering her own sense of agency and self-actualization and becoming, you know, a stronger person through, you know, a set of very heightened circumstances that are compressed over a short period of time. I mean, the film takes place over 24 hours, which in terms of filming was a whole other set of challenges. But in terms of our character development, you know, we wanted to say, over the course of 24 hours, starting at midnight on New Year's Eve, that's where the film starts, the ball's dropping, and, you know, everyone's counting down and cheering, and it ends at midnight on New Year's Day. So within 24 hours, a whole bunch of really crazy circumstances occur, but we also see each of the characters go through a journey to change in a relatively short period of time, and that's always tricky, I think, because a lot of films and television shows, you see characters evolve over much, much longer arcs.
You know, seasons, yeah.
Right,
seasons
particularly
worth,
with TV shows. Yeah. And in a film, you've got to set all that up, you've got to have them change, and you've got to come to a satisfying resolution for each and every person.
Yeah, or unsatisfying resolution.
Or deliberately unsatisfying, sure.
You never know.
Yeah.
I didn't know if the characters' names were coming from, I know this was almost based on a news article.
I mean,
in a way, I didn't know if she was Lindsay or somebody was Lindsay.
I would say that's more like you go to an agriculture store and you buy a seed and you don't really know what it is, you just look at what the seed is and then you plant it and something you didn't expect grows from it.
Yeah.
That's really the article that you're referring to. Mm-hmm. Was something that Alston had read and I had seen a number of years ago. I think it happened 15 years before. And, you know, that germ of an idea and not necessarily the circumstances of what happened, but more like what happened character-wise.
Yeah.
Was what it grew from. And should we talk about that story? Or?
Yeah, I'm definitely there.
Okay.
Yeah, please, basically.
That the story was a woman hit a guy with her car. True story, I think it was down in Houston. Hit a guy with her car. He busted like halfway through the windshield. And then she just sort of freaked and drove home, parked the car in her garage. And over the course of the next 48 hours, this guy bled out and died.
While he was begging for help.
Yeah, he was screaming the whole time. And her boyfriend and her are listening to him. And they just watched this guy die, and I think she was even like a nurse, so it was like doubly bizarre. So yes, we do hit someone with a car, but that's not really, we don't have someone go through the windshield and all that happens. But what was intriguing about this story was how does a normal person, a seemingly normal person, wind up making a horrible, horrible decision that's, you know, on its face incredibly cruel. And I read a book a number of years ago called The Murderer Next Door, and it was a study of people in prison that were incarcerated for murder, and it was examining them, and the shocking results of this are that most of these people were not seasoned criminals or even sociopaths. They were normal people who have been put under, you know, severely trying emotional circumstances, and they just snapped. I mean, that's why, you know, when there is a murder, cops always look to, like, you know, the love interest in the family, because it's normally these emotional things that come up in all of our normal lives. But in certain circumstances, they reach a boiling point. And it's not that anyone could be a murderer, but more people are out there that could be than you would expect.
When reaching their boiling point. That,
exactly.
I mean, that's pretty scary.
Yeah, very scary.
Do you think, oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
Do you think, Alex, that a lot of ideas come from these germs of true stories? Or do you think it's, you know, just completely like fiction, we just try to create something out of it? Or do you think it's always that little spark of a germ from a true story?
I think even if we do try to create something from our imagination, it's still tied to something that's universally human. I mean, outside of science fiction or the supernatural, you know, most of these stories are very much rooted in what is true about human nature, which is kind of what makes them so unsettling.
Because I feel like movies are all based on an actual true story. I even feel like horror stories are... I believe in ghosts, and I feel like all these ghost stories are for... Like, it has to be based on something, you know?
It's something, but I think if it's... And if it's
extreme, but that's me.
And if it's not, if it's completely made up, I think it, like, doesn't have quite the same authenticity.
Yeah.
Because if it doesn't have that kernel of truth that is, like, part of the universal human experience, audiences sniff that out in a heartbeat.
Yeah, and it's almost like Vince Gilligan talking about Breaking Bad. He actually read about that chemist teacher who started making crystal meth.
Interesting.
And he actually read the article, and that's how he almost adapted the whole story.
Wow.
And then added in the sprinkles, like you were saying, to the story.
Right.
Same exact thing. Now, Alston, can you describe, because we were talking, I was hungry already to begin this interview with, and you were describing hunger. Can you describe this film best as a dish? What dish is this film?
What dish is this film?
We can start maybe from...
Some sort of wintry stew.
A wintry stew.
Yeah, so like we're beef stew.
Like on a pot on the fire or like stove? Like are we vintage? A vintage stew?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're just like a big metal pot, like in a
beef bourguignon.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking more of, you know, there's the weird shack in the woods with like a witch or something cooking a stew. Now, I might be biased because we filmed in the dead of winter in Rhode Island and it was about 10 or 15 degrees the whole time. So
winter stew would have been nice back then.
Yeah,
that's true. That's true.
Wishful thinking.
Well, that actually brings, because what was each of your favorite meals at Crafty during this whole thing? Because it seems like y'all had to be on the go.
Yeah. Natalie's Deli in East Greenwich, Rhode Island was
champs.
The place.
Go-to?
Dean Natalie, awesome guy. I loved the breakfast burritos. Those things were killer.
I think, didn't they do like meatball subs at one point?
Yeah, they did meatball subs.
Those were great. Those were my favorite.
Mashed potatoes and meatloaf. That was my favorite
one. It's all very warm, very hearty food. Oh. So,
needed.
Yeah.
So
needed, but you know, we packed on a few pounds when we were
needed.
Up
just good food all around.
Yeah. Oh my God.
What is it about New England What made you choose this location? Because I do feel like New England has almost that eerie feeling. Mm-hmm. Like, you can, like, you know, Walking Dead, you know, Atlanta, Georgia area, but there's nothing creepy until you throw zombies in it. But, you know, if I'm putting Rhode Island by myself, I'm still going to be scared. Yeah. There won't be any zombies. I feel like something's there, though.
Absolutely.
In that cottage where the stew's brewing.
Totally.
What is it about New England?
No good.
I think it's the history of it. It's the history, and it's the look, and it feels so desolate and bleak. You know, we were shooting in that time. We were shooting in the winter, but it was actually an unusually, like, low amount of snowfall.
Uh-huh.
So we... You know, it's that time of year where the trees are there, where you almost wish it would snow, just so it's something to cut against that, like, bleak, empty, you know, trees are barren feel that, you know, particularly for New Year's, and you know, there's such a nostalgic quality to New Year's.
Yeah.
It's a time of new beginnings, and it's like there's nothing in the world. Everything's dead, you know, which is kind of similar to what this couple's marriage is like, you know, everything
so
inside
almost went together
special.
Perfectly.
Exactly.
Just being so.
I mean, that
bare.
Was the idea. We went through a lot of hurdles to shoot in New England. You know, we had some opportunities to film it here in Southern California, and we just didn't feel like it was going to have the same quality.
Yeah.
You know,
we're
shooting
searching in Pasadena. There's like two streets that have deciduous trees where the leaves actually fall off, and you find them, and you're like. Yeah, and there's a palm tree over there, and it's Southern California. You can't make this look cold or creepy.
And then you take a right, and then all of a sudden there's a music festival, and there's, like, nowhere to shoot in between anymore.
Unless
it's on soundstage.
And, you know, such a critical part of our location was having that drive through the woods, like the drive through the creepy woods. It's almost a trope of films, but for our particular film, it was really important, and I knew what I wanted that to look like. And that just does not exist here. And we didn't want to do the thing where you shoot on stages here and then you go to New England and have like a, you know, second unit camera and you just pick up some shots because it just, again, doesn't have the same authenticity. And there's also something about going on location with a cast and crew where, you develop the summer camp atmosphere where it's fun, but everybody's there. They don't have friends and family around. They can't go to sleep in
their
own
beds.
Over there, you're staying in Airbnbs and you're there to work. And that's what you do. You work all the time. And I think, I can't speak for the actors, but I mean, for me, it allowed me to really like dive deeply into this subject matter and into the film. And really, you're living and breathing it 24 hours a day. Mm-hmm. And that's a gift you get when you're on location.
How many days did it take for y'all to shoot? Not complete production, just on location shooting.
On location shooting was 22 days.
And 22 days.
Prepping
so
for 6 or 7 weeks before that.
Yeah. So y'all just blasted. Was it, you know, lines, there's a lot of deep content, you know?
Totally.
How was that in 22 days?
Well, I'm really obsessive compulsive about running lines.
Yeah.
So I would just make the other actors run lines with me constantly.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, it was definitely like we were, once we started, it was like tunnel vision the whole time, like working on set and then working on what you do the next day at home and then back on set. And like, it was very, which I like, I mean, I like being immersed.
Yeah.
I don't like having too much time to just sit around and get cold, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I like to be like, on a, so that, despite how much they tried to make me cold.
She was a good sport.
We knocked the hot water heater off when we were tying in the electrical stuff to the house, and no one realized this for 2 weeks until about 15 minutes before there's a scene where she ends up in a shower, and we realize that there's no hot water, and this is a
house. So you braved it out.
Oh, yeah.
That deserves an award in itself.
Right.
Yes. I couldn't do that.
Minor hypothermia.
Tell the world.
Yeah, for real. I wouldn't be able to do that.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, it was pretty. We got it pretty fast, though. Mm-hmm. And then I turned it off.
It was one take.
It was one take, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, they were shaking. I had to, when we filmed, in the end of the take, you can see them shivering. So I had to cut it right at the point where their jaws are starting to really move.
Yeah. I'm hyperventilating, though, before
that.
We got
the hot water heater back on, though, after that.
Yeah, and they told me.
Oh,
yeah.
It's like, if you want to take a shower now, you're welcome.
Yeah,
we're not
you're, like, committed.
Yeah, exactly. It's, like, good to know.
You had to make that look really comfortable, and even though it was terrible. Mm-hmm. What was, you know, your favorite scene that we can discuss to shoot?
That we can discuss? We can discuss very generally the one scene I think most people will walk away from the film remembering that's got some well-placed graphic violence, But the one that we can discuss openly is the film. The first shot of the film takes place in a New Year's Eve party.
Yeah.
And I think I enjoyed that because it was a lot of fun in that it was critical to get it right. And it's hard when you're trying to get free extras and you're worried about, can you pack this room with enough people?
For sure.
And then it's like a Steadicam shot coming in. And so you're trying to get everyone amped up to cheer and be excited. And then the second the shot's, you know, cut, the ADs, the assistant directors, are trying to get everyone to quiet down. And I had been the one in the audience. I'm in the background, like, trying to get everyone, like, excited. And so I'm like, no, we can't just tell them all to be quiet because it's really hard to get people, like, this pumped. Yeah. And I just thought, I mean, it was fun. Like, we staged a whole New Year's Eve party, and there's, like, really terrible, gross-looking food off to the corner. And I just thought it was really cool because you go in and it's like, oh, it's a New Year's Eve party at an American Legion in a small town in Rhode Island.
Yeah, and they you know, everybody got to celebrate. I say got as if it was a privilege, but they celebrated New Year's Eve, you know, the countdown maybe 12, 15 times. I mean, over and over and over. So, you know, by the end, they were kind of like, 3, 2, happy New Year.
So Oh, sorry.
No, please,
I was
going to
say, there was one old couple that kissed each other very passionately.
Yeah. A little too passionate.
Yeah, every time. They
Did
were
you get
like,
every shot of that? Every kiss?
Yeah, I know. Right? Yeah. We just did coverage on them.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was a really, you know, it was a great choreography and getting the Steadicam right. And we had some great people in Rhode Island who helped us get people to come that were just fans of films. And I think that's another thing you get in a place like Rhode Island, like aside in L.A., you know, people can be a little jaded because they see filming happening all the time on every street corner. But in Rhode Island, it's a real opportunity for people. So people were incredibly excited to come out for free. We gave them pizza. And they get to spend, you know, 6 hours celebrating New Year's over
on
and
set.
Over and over.
Yeah, like you're saying, it is unique. Because I know over here, you know, you get some IMDb credit meal. And people say, I'm going to show up.
And they don't.
80% don't.
Yeah, and you know? I do want to give one shout out to our friend Matt Myers, who's the lead singer of an incredible band called Houndmouth, which I was a big fan of. And when we were making the film, I reached out to them, and I had used some of their music in a television show I directed. And we got Matt to come up, and he's the guy singing Auld Lang Syne.
Uh-huh.
So, and he's a phenomenal guitar player, an incredible vocalist. So every time, I mean, I think that really kept the energy going because they're seeing a world-class rock star perform Auld Lang Syne.
You gave him a gift.
Yeah, yeah, they were psyched. I was psyched. I mean, there was one point where I just let a take roll for, I don't know, 5 or 7 minutes because I wanted to hear him riffing Auld Lang Syne, which was a dream come true.
Now, what was one of the biggest challenges with this film as a director? On location or post-production or even pre-production?
Mm-hmm. You know, I think it was... There's so many. It's like every mountain you climb, you realize there's another mountain on top of that. So
that's life. I do agree. Yeah, I think we all go through those moments.
If I had known what it was when I started out, I'm not sure I would have had the courage to like undertake it. I mean, I say that
you
now.
Would, yeah.
I hope that I would have done it, but I mean, you think, okay, once we get done filming, it's all in the bank, and then once we get done editing, it's all in the bank. But then you've got distribution to deal with. So I would say probably the hardest thing was committing to it, like really committing to it and saying, okay, we've got this script, we have most of the money, maybe not all of it, we could wait around for another year and get some Hollywood producers to come help us and take this away, but as an independent filmmaker, you can't really rely on anybody to get your film made but you. So I think it was that final leap a few months before we moved to Rhode Island, which is like, you know what, come hell or high water, we're going to do this.
Yeah.
And a couple days after Christmas that year, we drove up to Rhode Island and found and honestly, the first Craigslist place we showed up at turned out to be a crack den. Literally a crack den. And we had to spend the night there, and we had it booked for 3 weeks. And I was like, no way, man. We're checking out. I told them I had bed bugs, and we just left the next day.
You got the cancellation fee? Did you get that?
Oh, yeah, we got it all back. No, because I was like, you guys have bed bugs. He's like, really? Oh, here, you take your money. Get out.
No.
But, you know, and you're there, and then, you know, I was really trying to round everybody up. We had a couple of key hires already in place, like our AD, our production designer. A line producer from Boston came down and helped us, who became a producer on the film. And so we had some key people in place, but then it's, you know, finding who's the great, because, you know, in indie film, if you have bad sound, it's not going to sell. It's not going to sound good. I mean, things like that can kill you. One weak link in the chain. So rounding up all those people, all that talent, and we found an incredible crew to work on it. But, you know, the way to do it is we said we're going to start filming on February 6th. That's the first day of photography.
Yeah.
You're either with us or you're not. And it's happening. And
yeah.
by saying, believing in it so convincingly, we willed it to happen. And I think getting to the point where you decide that's what you're going to do, for me personally, I think that was the hardest part. It was once I made that leap, I was fully committed because I knew that nothing in the world was going to stop me from getting this film made and ultimately getting it released.
Yeah, and it's happened.
It's happened.
Already on VOD, as of March 2nd,
yeah.
and digital HD.
And theaters, in select
and
theaters.
And select theaters.
Yeah.
So well done. You know, you got yeah. the courage to do it. You did a good job. All of you,
thank
everyone.
You.
And everyone who's not even here yet. Well, yeah, because they're coming. That's what I'm actually putting into the atmosphere right now.
Oh, yeah. totally
they're
blow,
on their way.
Blows my mind that my 99-year-old grandfather in Asheboro, North Carolina, a little town in the middle of North Carolina, that he can go on his TV mm-hmm. and click a button and rent our movie.
Wow.
Yeah.
Has he done that? Has he watched it?
I don't think he has yet.
Okay.
But,
it's only been 3 days. It's yeah. only been 3 days.
Well, we're going to send my uncle over because he sometimes has some trouble navigating that stuff. But
there
yeah.
he is. So he will.
Yeah.
It's,
he will.
It's close
he
enough. Will. Has any of your family or friends seen the film yet?
No. None of them have yet.
Have you told them? Because I know I have some actor friends who wouldn't even say.
I will tell
okay.
my family for sure.
Yeah.
All my friends. And
are you just saying that
because
I got these two next to me?
No. I've been posting. I've actually been like trying to get over my social media block and actually post about stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I'm like doing it.
That helps. Social media
yeah.
is definitely the way to spread the word.
Yeah.
I encourage everybody to post. Like, watch the film. Go to MidnightersFilm.com. You can find links to find every way in which to watch it and then spread it, you know?
And share. Congratulations, I mean, on the 89% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah,
thank
we
you.
Boom.
Thanks so
very
much.
Excited
well
about
done.
The reviews.
That's a huge feather in
We've
our
had
cap.
Some great reviews.
And yeah, and you
really
got so many awards. I mean, we got, where is it now? Jeez Louise, we got Official Selection California Film Fest.
Yeah, Los Angeles Film Festival, yeah.
Oh, you know yeah. what? Sometimes my handwriting is so bad that I actually did write, what, L.A. and it's C. Anyway, that's my life. That's my biggest challenge.
Yeah.
I see a mountain, there's another one. That's my handwriting. Then we got Official Selection Oldenburg.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Winner Best Feature, Best Actress Feature. Oh, Horrible Imaginings. I mean, y'all, there's more to the list.
Yeah, it's been
yeah.
a really
How
fun
are those feelings?
Festival run. It's been great. We were actually just in Sedona last week. We had two sold-out screenings at the Sedona International Film Festival, which is a beautiful city. And, you know, it's awesome. I mean, we're kind of at the end of our festival run now because once
yeah.
you release it, you don't really do festivals anymore. But, you know, it was fun. I mean, there's some great experiences and parties and meeting wonderful people all over. And then just the opportunity to go to random places. I mean, we were in Eastern Poland and had a group watch it. We were in Ravenna, Italy. And I tell you, the Italians love their thrillers. They love
really?
Mars. Yeah, we won the whole festival. I mean,
that's awesome.
It's amazing to watch your film and you're seeing Italian or Polish subtitles or French subtitles or whatever below it.
Yeah.
And just people get to experience this thing that we've lived and breathed for, you know, a pretty long time.
Yeah, and you guys are in the back of the theater kind of like, that's
us. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
us,
guys. Yeah.
No big deal. We're going to get this pub. No big deal, guys.
With Ravenna, and I'm not sure if she knows this, but so we won the Audience Award, and then the Critics Award that they choose was a film called Fashionista, which Alex is also
yeah.
yeah, that's right.
Well
and
done.
Alex, that's a double feature.
Yeah.
Well done.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
So if
yeah.
you ever go to Ravenna, you're a star.
Oh, I'd love to go to Ravenna one day.
Now, has this opened any doors, even in your mind or, you know, in the real world right now from doing this film? You know, are you going to try and pursue even more film or even television? Because I know you come from a big television past, you know,
mm-hmm.
working together again on television or more film, such as this thriller, the same genre.
Yeah, I've since I've been in L.A. the last few years, I've kept up writing scripts even as we were putting this together. So I've got, I think, 4 features and 2 pilots that I'm sitting on. And the hope is certainly that it'll open doors. And I know Jude's got some projects too. And we both have enough and they're varied enough. I think there are some that we're very interested in collaborating on together and then some where are kind of our own thing.
Yeah.
So I've got both TV and movies and we'll see what hits.
Yeah. Is there ever competition between you guys?
No,
you know, working
never,
together.
Never.
Is there not like, I have better scripts than you? Or like, is there anything like that? It had to have been something. I have a younger brother. We will argue about everything. Who has more of the marshmallows and their Lucky Charms? We will argue about whatever.
You know, I think it's less competitive per se. I mean, there were definitely some arguments through this process. Interestingly, never really on creative stuff, just because I think we have real similar taste, and I've told the story a few times, but I think that's partially because my coming of age with films was largely as he's, you know, 10, 12, 14 renting R-rated slasher picks in the 80s, and I'm like 6, 7, or 8 watching, you know, Friday the 13th and the Halloween series, yeah. Which I probably shouldn't have been, but, you know, shared collective taste as a result.
Yeah, for any of our underage viewers out there, I advocate my strategy when I was a kid. I think I was 6th or 7th grade. I convinced my mom to let me watch Psycho because it's an Alfred Hitchcock film.
It's a classic. It's
got critical acclaim, etc. And so after, you know, much debate, she finally agreed because it's Alfred Hitchcock.
Yeah.
It's a classic.
Learning.
And
it's
then
educational.
It was a quick leap to, well, if I've seen Psycho 1, I really want to see Psycho 2 and Psycho 3. And let's just say they don't have as much critical charm, as much artistic license going on. And so that kind of opened up the gateway.
Now, have you had any doors that you think you want to open or have been opened to you from doing this film now that has been released? And, you know, the feedback, you know, from Rotten Tomatoes and critics?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's, you know... when you are in something that you're proud of and that people like, you know, it definitely, word gets around and you know, get meetings or make new connections with people or find out about, you know, new projects. Oh, we saw Midnighters and we think you'd be, you know.
Yeah. And now, do you think you're going to try and venture into more film?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me what it did is it, I mean, yes, it's opened up certain career doors and, you know, I mean, Alston, he's too modest to mention, but he got some really amazing, like, high-powered representatives out of this. They saw the film and they loved the script, and that was a really, you know, huge, you know, it's a huge door to be opened. For me, I would say more artistically, I mean, by exploring kind of what I was doing here, it opened doors inside my own mind in terms of the type of work that I want to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just led me down some new paths that I don't think I would have necessarily predicted a couple years ago in terms of the projects. I mean, I have two television projects that one is like a more of a tech noir thriller. Like it's in that vein. I mean, it has to do with a modern mystery that's technologically based, that a bit of science fiction thrown in. And then the other one, though, is really unrelated to anything I've done before, except that it has very strong characters, and it's a 70s, little more nostalgic coming-of-age series about a very unique topic that deals with fantasy.
Well, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy to hear that, you guys. You know, great things are coming from this film. Mm-hmm. It's an awesome film to begin with, and I'm happy you guys completed it. And
Thank you.
Are all happy with the
We're
end result.
Yeah.
And you guys got good travel out of it and good feedback from all the audiences. Where can we find you at? On social media, online? So we can keep updated, you know, now that we're moving all around now.
I'm on Facebook. I am probably going to start an Instagram account. I'm a bit of a hobbyist with photography, and I've been told that I should do it. I kind of wanted something that was more not Facebook, and then of course Facebook owns Instagram, but
yeah,
you know, what can you do?
It's a whole discussion about the algorithm.
Whole another
thing.
And where can we find you?
I'm just at LXSO on all the platforms, but I use Instagram the most, so
the
that's
most?
The best place to find
awesome.
Me.
Awesome.
Yeah. And I'm at Julius Ramsey 4, that's an SAY 4 on Instagram and Twitter, and Midnighters Film, though, like if you go at Midnighters Film on all the platforms, that's where you can see our movie and
mainly
direct
Instagram.
You to links. Yeah, we have a lot of followers on Instagram, but we're also on Twitter and Facebook.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
Awesome, man. We're so glad
Julius
to be here.
Ramsey,
yeah.
Alex Esso, Alston Ramsey. Thank you guys so much.
Thanks,
I'm Nick
guys.
Marty. This was Popcorn Talk. Don't forget that Midnighters is out right now on VOD and digital HD, and the Ramsey's grandfather is going to go watch it, I think, by the end of the day.
Yeah, Gingy, right? This is for you.
Thank you guys so much, and we'll catch y'all later.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.